It's not too early to start thinking about your furnace tune-up. The friendly technicians at Design Air Heating and Cooling will clean and test your furnace so it runs safely and efficiently all winter. Peace of mind that your family is safe during the heating season. If you need a new furnace, Design Air is the number one trained dealer in the Midwest. Design Air Heating and Cooling. See more at designair.net. Design Air Heating and Cooling, proud partner of the St. Louis Cardinals. That's Design Air Heating and Cooling.
Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome into Scoops with DannyMac.com, and it's my visit with Derek Gould coming up of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com, and a long, long visit of the season that was for the Cardinals, and also looking ahead to 2020. Wainwright, Ozuna, Molina, some of those guys have 1 year remaining on their contracts. Some have none. Would they be back? What do you do with Tommy Edman? How about Matt Carpenter, Dexter Fowler? We'll get into that. The year for Paul DeJong, maybe the importance of trying to find a backup for him as being a central piece for the Cardinals going forward as we look ahead to 2020. We'll also dive into the World Series as well. If you missed it, I have a podcast that is up. I dropped this on Monday morning with the Cardinals' top prospect, and he could be in center field, left or right, and that's Dylan Carlson. Young man, 20 years of age, so well-spoken. I think you'll love that visit with Dylan as he talks about his season that was and then also his offseason coming up and looking ahead to trying to make the Cardinals roster in 2020. He was on the roster, by the way, for the Arizona Fall League and then elected not to go. And in the podcast, I asked him, why not?
Me and my agent, we had a discussion about that topic, and we just felt like the season was such a positive that, you know, we really wanted to duplicate the offseason. We had the offseason before to come best prepared for next year, and the team agreed that, you know, I got plenty of at-bats, and they just felt that me duplicating what I did the offseason before would really be beneficial going into this next offseason to, you know, really prepare me.
Some guys say, well, I really don't have any goals. I'm just kind of, you know, go make the team and chips fall where they may. But do you have goals going into 2020 for the upcoming spring training and the upcoming, what you hope, I'm sure, is a major league season?
Yeah, for me, just I have one goal. It's the same goal each and every day, and it's try to find a way to become a better player each and every day. That's the one thing I try to focus on, and I try to have that attitude each and every day. That way it really keeps me learning and keeps me focused and keeps me going each and every day. That's something I really take pride in, is, you know, being a student of the game and trying to learn each and every day. That way I can maximize myself and my talent, you know, really find ways to get that edge.
That's Dylan Carlson, and you can hear the entire podcast on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. We're coming to you in brilliant clarity thanks to Lordo's Diamonds. And if you have a special occasion coming up for that special someone in your life, visit lordosdiamonds.com. You mention my name or scoopswithdannymac.com and get additional money off. They're located in the heart of Ladue, and that's lordosdiamonds.com. Coming up, we'll visit with Derek Gould. More features keep rolling out on the Schnucks Rewards app, all designed to simplify shopping. Your rewards points still continue to pile up, earning you money off your next purchase. But now you can create customizable and shareable shopping lists. Shop for your family's dietary needs with the new wellness icons. Gluten-free, organic, heart smart, it's all covered. So this week, simplify shopping. Try the new features on the Schnucks Rewards app. Shopping will never be the same. Schnucks Rewards. Download it today. Away we go as we talk it over with Derek Gould of STLtoday.com and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And Derek has been covering this Cardinals team for now how many years, Derek?
Since 2004. So does that put me at 16 seasons, almost 17 seasons?
That's right. That's a lot of winning baseball you've been a part of, too.
It's exactly half as many years as you've been covering the Cardinals.
Now, Derek, this isn't about, you know, tit for tat here. This is about establishing the great career that you've already put together and will continue for the next 50 years.
Hey, you know, I don't know if you've done this or not, but something I was thinking about doing this winter was sitting down and looking back at the number of games I've attended that didn't matter, in the sense that they had no implications. Obviously, all playoff games matter, but that have no implications on the standings.
Well, I can help you very quickly, because I did this at the end of the season. Since 2011, the Cardinals have played in three games that did not matter in the standings, meaning they were eliminated from postseason play. A total of three, if my calculations are correct.
So three since 2011. So we would have to go back and add 2010, 2007, and 2008, and then we would have our answer.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been amazing, this run the Cardinals have been on. It really is.
And seven would be the longest, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And that was the only losing season.
And in 2007, it was interesting. It was the opening day was the opening night of the baseball season. It was a beautiful night. I'll never forget it, against the Mets. And Chris Carpenter blows out his arm and done for the year. And you're thinking, oh, my goodness, what's going on? The Cardinals had added, I think, Kip Wells and Adam Kennedy back in 2007. So that was their offseason moves. And I remember specifically in 07, a huge either four- or five-game series, I believe it was, against the Cubs, and Alfonso Soriano hit a bomb that kind of took the wind out of the sails of the Cardinals, because they were starting to make a push that month, and then by the end of the month, it was all over. But it wasn't much. I mean, they still had a chance, and in that September, they were making a run too. So, you know, it's not like you've been talking about where some teams are – tanking, rebuilding, whatever you want to talk about and how you want to phrase it. You know, the Cardinals have been competitive, I think, even if you look at months or weeks, just about every week of the Major League season since 19, well, you could say probably 2000, I guess. And it's been a remarkable run.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, you know, you think about how, just from a coverage perspective, right, you think about how there are teams that long about August 1st, after the trade deadline, you start lapsing into covering games like you do in spring training, where it's more about the people than the results. It's more about the trend than the results. It's more about what this means for next year than what it means for today. And there, you don't have time during the regular season when covering the Cardinals. And part of that is the nature of the environment and the demands of the readers and the demands of the fans and what they want to read about. The results matter, even when the Cardinals are eliminated the few times that they have been. But you don't ever have that dial that you twist here on this beat where you're like, okay, now is the time where we stop covering the games and we start covering the meaning of the games for next year. That just doesn't happen.
What about this season, Derek? You've had a chance now to kind of reflect on specifically the NLCS, where the Cardinals were, there's no other way to put it. I mean, they were shut down completely offensively. Yeah. Why did it happen, and how does it change going forward?
Well, why it happened is because multiple reasons. One, they ran into tremendous pitching, peak pitching, probably the best pitching. I think the best pitching we've seen in the postseason, and that includes Houston. We'll see how Washington does in the World Series, but that was the best group of pitchers that I've seen in the postseason. Boy, I don't know, maybe ever, when you think about a trio and how well they did. But they also used the Cardinals' trends against them. They used the Cardinals, what the Cardinals' weaknesses were and what their propensities were and what their habits were offensively were absolutely turned against them. I was really impressed with how well the Nationals knew the Cardinals and how well they knew how to execute a plan to shut them down, and then of course they had the talent to do so. That's what stood out to me, was that it was like a magnification on the offensive woes the Cardinals had.
How does it change going forward then?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. One thing is to change personnel. They're going to have some forced changes on them, which is probably a good thing. You know, roster turn can always be a good thing. But also, I don't know, the coaching staff did such a good job last year of identifying problems with the defense and then implementing change and then improving the defense. And now part of that was definitely the addition of Paul Goldschmidt. Fine. So that can be part of it. So it's the addition that helps, but it's also everything around it. Look at the work they did with Paul DeJong. Look at the use of shifting, which was more this year than the previous 3 years combined. You know, all those things kind of were identified as ways to improve the defense. And to be candid, I wonder if the offense undergoes a similar audit. It probably ought to. It probably will.
That's a great point.
For ways it can improve for the coming season. And yeah, like I said, that includes addition, right? Paul Goldschmidt was an addition, but it also includes, all right, what drills are they doing in spring that didn't work? What approaches that would be akin to shifts that they need to implement? Things like that.
Jeff Albert, the hitting coach in the Cardinals, have kind of really, in my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm phrasing this properly, but they've gone all in with him. He's the hitting coach with the major league team. He's implementing a system that he wants to be done in the minor league. So it's kind of his baby to develop it. And the idea was, generally speaking, fewer strikeouts, ball in play. And I think that's a fair way to put it, to simplify it. Kind of his philosophy and what they were looking for. And then you looked in the NLCS, and we didn't see that. And we saw 49 times in the regular season, two or fewer runs. Again, it could be personnel, and that's the type of hitter that they've had, or is it the philosophy that needs to change? I think it's going to be a really interesting dynamic going into this offseason, into spring training, of what is expected of Jeff Albert, what he expects, and are the Cardinals seeing what he's implementing coming to fruition next year? I think there's a little pressure on him to do that.
I think there's a lot of pressure on him, and there's a lot of expectation. I mean, look, I don't, you know, just in your description there, think about how many things that he's being asked to do that used to be the purview of four different people, or at least. I mean, you're talking about a major league coach who's being asked to install and design and then implement or help implement an organizational approach. I mean, what other major league coach do you know of that's been asked to do that?
Not many.
I mean, Dave Duncan, kind of, but it was more inspired by Dave Duncan.
Correct. Right.
With assist from Dave Duncan. They would bring Dave into those meetings and talk to him about what he saw, because he was the expert. It was like Dave Duncan was the consultant. You know, he was the consultant brought into the minors to help out with things. And Jeff Albert is asked to be the CEO of two different companies.
Sure.
It's interesting. I think there's more to his approach and what he wants than what happens at the plate. Certainly some of this is, are the Cardinals going to catch up technologically, both on pitching and both on hitting? They have made the investment. They're going to make more. They're changing their analytics department a little bit. They're going to make that look different, because they felt like, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, certainly, they were at the vanguard. They were at the lead. They were the one without the flashlight leading everybody else through the woods of new analytics. Now they're behind. Now we can debate where they are, but now they're definitely behind in the sense of they're not at the cutting edge, and they want to be. So he's involved in acquiring and utilizing and helping the team become more proficient in the tech that's available for hitters as well. So I think that's part of it. Also, I think it would really behoove them to articulate better what he wants from the hitters. Because there are times where they will talk about how important it is for individual hitters to have individualized approaches. And then there are times where they talk about how it's important to have an overarching kind of approach and philosophy. And Mark McGwire was really good at articulating how those two things meet. He was great at squaring that circle. And some of that would be helpful today. You know, some of that notion of like, okay, how do you explain to non-hitters, us, so that we can explain to fans, what exactly they're trying to pull off?
Let's continue the conversation, and we'll dive into some of the individuals here in a moment. If you'd like to get an advantage over the house this fall, you need to download BetQL, only app you'll need to make smart bets this season. If you want to know who pro bettors are betting on, college or pro games, BetQL shows you sharp data comparing the amount of money placed on a bet and the percentage of public tickets on a game. Download BetQL for your smartphone or go to betql.co to sign up. Let's do some quick hitters here. I'm going to throw some names at you. Just tell me what comes to mind. Might turn into a question, too, or as a follow-up as well. Marcell Ozuna, what comes to mind right now when you think of Marcell and maybe his potential of being a Cardinal beyond this season?
Does he accept the qualifying offer?
Do you think he'll do it?
Boy,
what's the market for him?
Yeah, I think it's really intriguing. I think it's fascinating because he's of an age where it makes sense. He's of an age where scrubbing loose that draft pick would be really helpful for those markets. He's going to hit free agency likely before that's rewritten, meaning he could hit it twice before the new CBA goes into play and the compensation changes. I think it's a real fascinating dilemma for both him and a win-win for the Cardinals. In a lot of ways, they're really well positioned for this because if he comes back, he does so on a one-year deal, or they agree to a two-year deal, or or 1 year with an option or something. And then if he walks and thinks he can get a bigger deal elsewhere, he probably could. He just will have to wait and wait and wait, or hope that there's a team out there that just adores him. And then you get a draft pick for the Cardinals,
sure,
in exchange. So really a win-win position for the Cardinals because of what could happen. I think it's a no-brainer to offer him the qualifying offer and see what his approach is.
Adam Wainwright, your gut feeling, does he come back? Mine is yes. How about you?
I don't have one, Dan. I really wish I did. I bore people with this stuff, but I think I've purposely not tried to see what direction the Spidey sense sends in this, somewhat out of respect for Wainwright and not guessing and just in talking with him as he kind of sorts through the idea. I thought for sure halfway through this season, entering the season, that this was his victory lap. He was going to go out on his own terms. He was going to go and pitch healthy, pitch well, see where this team could take it, and then, not have the regret in his mouth that came from the last few years. But he pitched so well in the second half, pitched really well in September, is really fond of this team. I don't know if he's caught by the poetry of pitching and leaving at the same time as Molina. I don't think that's something that they're going to coordinate. But I think he really relished the ending of the season and how well he pitched, certainly in the playoffs too. He was really good then too. So I don't know. I know that it's really important for him to go out without regrets and to go out on his own terms and not have the game taken from him because of injury. He gets that choice now. I don't know how strong a desire it is to come back and compete with this team. And that's sort of where I am balancing on the fence, trying to figure out which one of those he's going to lean towards.
I think a story that will start to really gain traction after the World Series and certainly heading into Christmas time and the winter warm-up will be, is this truly it for Yadier Molina? Final year of his deal. I could see him playing beyond that. I've said that since day one. Even when he said this will be my final contract, I didn't believe it. And that's out of respect to Yadi. I think he loves to play the game. How about you? Do you think this is it for him?
No. I think he comes back for 2021.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
I think it'll be with the Cardinals. I think it's given. And I would not be shocked if at the beginning of 2021 or going into 2021, he assesses how much playing time he'll get, how he feels, and then decides at that time that this will be the victory lap, that he'll take a farewell tour and do like we've seen other great players do, announce their retirement, and then play out the year.
Part of the Ozuna equation, I would assume, is Dylan Carlson from the Cardinals' perspective. Mm-hmm. I have a podcast up with Dylan currently. Such a well-spoken young man. I'm excited to see him continue to get better and better. He's only 20 years of age. He'll be 21 by the time spring training rolls around. Dylan Carlson.
Wait, we've been covering the team almost as long as he's been alive?
I've been doing games before he was born, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I'm old. I'm getting old.
I think you look younger than ever, Dan.
Well, that's very kind of you. I wish you could come to my dinner table and tell that to my wife. So, Dylan Carlson, I'm so intrigued with him. What do you think the outlook is initially, beginning of the season, spring training with Dylan Carlson?
They'll give him a chance to play his way into the opening day lineup. That could be in center field. That could be in left field. It depends on moves made this winter, but it definitely could be somewhere in the outfield. They're going to have one of those positions open, depending on how they look at things. You think they will go in to spring training. Worst case, they go into spring training with the entire outfield open for competition. More likely, they at the least go in with one position in mind, and that could be Dexter Fowler and what position he plays. But best case, the Cardinals go in, and this is what they want to have happen, with two spots spoken for and then a competition that's thrown open for the other guys, for Dylan Carlson, for Lane Thomas, for Andy Rosarena, and, for the incumbent Harrison Bader, and Justin Williams, the left-handed hitter of the group. Dylan Carlson, being a switch hitter, has that edge, had a tremendous season. Wherever he's ranked in the upcoming prospect rankings, Dan, is too low. Wherever he is, unless he's in the top five, it's too low. This is a special hitter. He is the Jack Flaherty of the outfield set.
Yep.
That's the best comparison I can come up with. He is he's got a real seasoned, instinctual approach at the plate, particularly from the left side, from the right side, it's like a lot of switch hitters working on that side that doesn't always get all the most amount of attention because it doesn't get the amount of at bats that the other side gets. Just a real good feel for what the game demands away from the game. And that's where the comparison with Flaherty comes in. I think you'll see some learning curves like that, and then you'll see a young man take off. I think his ceiling is a number two hitter for a contending team, and you and I both know what it takes to be a contending number two hitter on a contending team. I mean, that is a spot where excellent hitters, stand. And Dylan Carlson has that ability. I'm very impressed with him. Going back to what he did at the Florida State League a year ago, and then how he built on that, and added to it, and just got better really month by month. That's such a strong sign for a prospect to do.
Yeah, he was better at every level, hit .361 at AAA. He would have been the first 2020 guy in 32 years in the Texas League. Very, very impressive. Reminder, join the party during Ticket Tuesdays at one of the 10 St. Louis area hotshot sports bar and grill locations, proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com and the St. Louis Blues. The place to go if you're not down at Enterprise Center to check out Blues hockey is Hotshots. HotshotsNet.com, proud partner of the Blues, home of the Blues fans since 1990. Do you see a scenario where both Carpenter and Dexter Fowler return?
Oh, boy, I do. I do see that. I don't know how that all works. I do know that the Cardinals will have conversations trying to find a way if the team looks differently with one or the other. They both have no trade clauses. Dexter's was written into his free agent contract. Carpenter's is about to be earned and then written into his extension. So, that's part of it. I don't really see... neither of those guys have been approached as of last check about it, but, the Cardinals are still kind of formulating their offseason plan. I think it's something that they'll definitely explore, not having one of the two. It's hard to see a scenario where one of the two isn't back, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Where they're both gone. But who they side with, what direction they want to go, I think it's really interesting. The outfield is definitely in play for the Cardinals to change the look of their offense. Third base is definitely in play for the Cardinals to change the look of their offense. And those are the two guys they have who are signed to big salaries to play those positions. Something has to give in that regard.
Tommy Edman gives the club versatility in that regard, too, and showed that he could play the outfield. We know he can play second. He can play third. Yeah. He can play short if need be. Played a lot of that in the minor leagues. What do you think the role for Tommy will be if there is a defined role for him going into spring training?
You know, somebody in the chat at stltoday.com, gratuitous plug, asked me about him being the left fielder. And my first reaction was, look, left field is where, like, giants roam, right? You don't pay too much attention to the glove because that's where, you know, Ozuna has played and Matt Holliday has played. And, you know, the guys who can play the position, but they're there for the position they're in the lineup, not the position they are in the field. Tommy Edman is, I was like, not that kind of hitter. But then, you know, I was kind of challenged in the chat, looked up the numbers, and, you know, the NL average in left field this past year was 260 average, 331 on base, 465 slug. So that's a 796 OPS. They averaged 28 homers and 35 doubles. So a lot of power there, extra base hits. You know, Edman went about it a different way, but he had an 850 OPS this past year. Throw in what he did in the minors, 869 OPS. I mean, 18 homers for a total season, that's not too bad. 19 home run pace if given a full season in the majors. You know, 30 doubles, so maybe that shifts a little bit. Maybe he's a 15-homer guy and a 35-double guy and a 10-triple guy. That's still, you're getting your bases from somewhere. So maybe there's something to that, Dan. I don't know. At first blush, you know, it'd be counterintuitive that he'd be like an option in the corner outfield spot, but it was all right. He was all right. And, you know, certainly if he's batting lower in the lineup, it brings some real depth to it, some real sting to the back end of the lineup. That would be helpful. Maybe his future, though, is more a Zobrist type. The Cardinals have wanted that type of position. They made Matt Carpenter into that player there for a little bit. Maybe Tommy Edman falls into that group where he's a complement at every position because he's a switch hitter, plays 5 out of 7, and that's the way to get the most from him.
Yeah, I like him as the Zobrist type. I don't like pinpointing him in his particular position because I think he gives you flexibility this offseason, gives you flexibility in game, gives you flexibility in what you want to do night after night. So that's kind of why I'm with you. I like him as a Ben Zobrist type player, knowing that he's going to play.
The one thing that has to happen is they got to decide if he can play shortstop.
Well, that leads me to my next question, and I think it's very, very important, and then I'll wrap it up. But I think the Cardinals, it's imperative to find a truly, and if they got to overpay for it, they got to do it. But Munoz is not the guy, in my opinion. You could spot him there every once in a while as a backup shortstop. Edman played a lot of that in the minor leagues. I'd love to see him play more of it in spring training to see what you get. But I think they got to find a utility guy or a with the emphasis being on shortstop to give Paul DeJong a break. I just thought Paul was worn out mentally and physically by the end of the year.
Yeah, I was really struck by that. I mean, actions always speak louder than words. And was their action so much that they didn't think they had an alternative? Edman, Jairo Munoz, they both played shortstop. They both have experience at shortstop. But was there just a lack? Was there so much trust or faith? Or, you know, they felt they needed Paul DeJong in the position because of how well he played it or because of what his bat brought to line. What was it that drove this notion that he should play? I mean, look, four players played more innings in the field than him this year? I mean, that's remarkable. I'm not talking about on the Cardinals. It's just a remarkable thing that he played so much at such a demanding position that we forget is still new to him. He worked a lot last winter to build his body, to give himself a body type that was, you know, more nimble and agile and lithe as opposed to strong and, you know, kind of packing on the muscle like he would have if he played third base. And he deserves credit for that, and he needed every inch of that to survive. He also, while everybody else got the All-Star break, he did not, and came out of that and then played a bunch. Coming back from a season where he missed time with a hand injury. I mean, I was really impressed with the workload that he took on in this season and B, alarmed by it. I thought it spoke to where the Cardinals felt their depth was at that position and certainly something they got to address. I don't know if the answer is a Hecheverria or, someone who's like a defensive specialist, like they would have gotten – in the past, it would have been, what, like a Cesar Asturias type? you know, I don't know if that's where the answer is, but certainly some kind of depth at shortstop needs to be addressed.
Final question. You're going to be covering the World Series. Doing some numbers here and looking at the teams that made it, the Nationals and Houston. I thought, and this is a trend that I find really interesting, because starters accounted for 58% of innings pitched in the majors across the major leagues this year. And you talk about bullpenning in October. You talk about taking guys out, not letting him see a lineup second time through, certainly not a third time. Well, that's not the case with the two teams that remain. Scherzer,
right.
Strasburg, Corbin, Gerrit Cole, Verlander, maybe Greinke. I mean, these are guys that will go deep into the games. And that's bucking the trend, if you will. And I think that's fascinating going into this World Series to see how that plays out with the starters.
I would argue that they're not bucking the trend. They're just correcting the trend.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to put it.
I think we're actually on the downslope of bullpenning. And we saw it not just with the two teams that you mentioned, but we also saw it in the division series with the Cardinals and the Braves. You think back to the majority of the games that were won were the games when the starters were at their best. And the Cardinals even lost the game when their starter was really good. I think, you know, teams like the Cardinals and the Nationals and the Astros, they have shown, you know, underscored the importance of that three-headed monster. You know, the three starters who can carry you and allow a bullpen to fall. I mean, you didn't see the Dodgers get through with all of their, genius use of the roster and pitching staff that has got them through. They maybe overthought it a little bit, and the Nationals rallied and won in that series and got hot and then steamrolled through the NLCS. I think you see that with other teams who just didn't have the pitching might from the rotation to counter what teams like the Nationals and Astros were doing. And I think people will take note of that. They may not have the money to spend that the Nationals have. I mean, that's a $500 million rotation that they have there.
Who do you like in the series?
I like the Nationals in the series.
I do too. Maybe we should go to BetQL and see if they agree with us.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I just like the pitching. I like Max Scherzer. I like what Patrick Corbin did. Strasburg is pitching great. I think they have just the edge in the pitching, which I don't think you'd say too often given the names, you know, Cole, Verlander, Greinke. There aren't too many teams that can line up well against that group, but the Nationals are the one team that can.
Derek, this was fun. Thanks so much. I know we went a long time here. I didn't mean to go that long with you, but this is fun.
18 years. Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to go year by year, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Nah, it's good catching up.
All right, buddy. Enjoy the World Series, and I'm sure we'll catch up very soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dan.
Hair Salon for Men, proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Home base in St. Louis, founded in 1997. 16 locations. You'll receive the perfect haircut, complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all for just $22. And for an extra $5, get a stress-relieving scalp massage. Hair Salon for Men, 16 locations. There's one near you. Hair Salon for Men.